This week, we trip and accidentally record a podcast. Welcome to the Midwest Peace Process.
Ladies and gentlemen,
I have the pleasure to present to you now.
I have the pleasure to present to you
the Midwest Peace Process.
The world is very different now.
The Midwest Peace
to remind
process.
America of the fierce urgency of now. 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 Now.
Welcome to episode 16. Now. Today is January 19th, 2012. I'm Jerry.
Hi, I'm Jeremy.
And Rob.
And Rob.
And Rob.
We're a little fired up this week, aren't we?
Yep.
Yeah.
We fired up.
We got some really good feedback from our listeners last week on our show about education. And so we're going to respond to some listener feedback on this episode. We're also going to start a new series of topics that one of our listeners challenged us to come up with our top two or three issues that are facing America. And so each of us went off and came up with our own little list, and we're going to cover one of those each week. So this week is the audacity of authority. And since this was Jeremy's topic, I will let him kick it off.
Kick okay. it. Right now.
Kick it.
I thought we were going to ease into this, but I'm not sure what made me come up with this today. Two things have happened. I've had this idea in my head for about 8 months, I guess, since the Good Friday tornadoes came through the area. So I had plans to meet a friend of mine for a beer that night. And though delayed, once the storms passed, everything was fine in my neighborhood. Power was still on. I left the neighborhood and had no trouble getting out. The streets weren't blocked with tree limbs or anything. It was fine in my neighborhood. While there, I got a text message from my neighbor. Hey, they have some streets blocked off. They're not letting people back in the subdivision. So I got home about probably around midnight, and they still had the road blocked. The blockade was set up about 50 feet in front of the entrance to my subdivision. I could see the entrance. I could have easily driven there, but they were diverting all the cars and telling people, you have to park on the street and walk home. And offering no explanation of why, it made zero sense. If there was a safety issue, then they shouldn't have been letting people in there at all.
Right.
Certainly not walking around.
Were they just trying to prevent looters from like driving in there and loading up their trunk with stuff?
But there was nothing to loot. The power was on in my subdivision. The subdivision that was hit, you can't drive to it from my subdivision.
Yeah.
There's no connection. I mean, you could.
I see what you're saying.
You could hike over some fences through a creek in about a mile.
and carry that flat screen TV on your shoulder while you're doing it.
Yeah. It made zero sense to me. And I didn't press the issue with the officer because I didn't want to be that guy. I guess I didn't want to get thrown in jail or
public school, not to question authority, right?
That's right. I was well schooled, and but it seems to me that it would have been a relatively simple task to check somebody's driver if they say I live in that subdivision there. Check their driver's license and let them pass through and drive home like normal. There was no reason given why they were doing it this way. And I think what burned me up the most was the smirk the officer had when he was telling me this, that no, I can't go in there. And when I said, well, you know, I live in there, it's right there. And, no, you need to park over there and walk. And that kind of stuff infuriates me.
Yeah.
Because if this had been a major widespread disaster and this kind of this kind of thinking is going on, or this kind of control of the situation, it's taking a bad situation and making it worse.
Right.
In my opinion. By the next morning, the roadblock was gone. I walked to my truck and drove. I was going to the gym that morning and, you know, drove to the gym. It was just in that moment
decision. It's just an example of, you know, a government agent overstepping the bounds of their authority.
Yes. And
well, or maybe not authority.
Some people would say, well, they have the authority that in an emergency situation to shut down a road. Okay, well, I agree that if there's perceived danger or threat to safety or whatever else, sure. But the way they go about it also should be considered, and not making the situation worse should be part of the operation there.
Right, and like you said, it obviously wasn't a safety issue, or they wouldn't have let you go in there at all.
Right.
So,
and I'm not sure how they were handling it for people leaving. I didn't see that. So I don't know what would have happened if somebody tried to drive out of the subdivision with that roadblock there.
Yeah.
Because they at that point they would have been behind the roadblock. And
so you said there were two things. That's one. What was the other one?
The other one, this had to do with work at work. Time charging is a big they make such a big deal about it, and we have these audits if you're correctly charging your time, and they give us training on it, and the people doing the sending out these edicts on how you need to do it, they don't charge the same way the what do you call us? The workers. The producers do, you know, guys like us three who are working on different projects. So these new rules come down, and one of them that kind of hacked me off was that you have to record your overtime by the end of the day. No, by the end of the shift, end of the day, and that we happen to be working overtime right now in my group. And the way I'm doing it, the way it works best for me, I'm at work the full day, and then I happen to leave to go do whatever, you know, have dinner, go to the gym in the evening, and then I go to, whether it's home or lately I've been going to a coffee shop and working on writing these documents there. And it's easy. I put my, sit there listening to my headphones, and I just crank this stuff out. What I don't want to do is then have to go home and log on to the internet to record another 2 hours of time when I can easily do it the next morning. And this new procedure is saying, well, that's illegal. You're in violation. There's no apparent reason for that, in my opinion.
Right. So it's just making rules because they can.
Yes. This was a very long-winded way of saying that. And you should have a bell here to wake some people up.
I'll refine your statements. It's not just because they can, it's they're making rules, and the point is the rules. It's not it's like a dog. When you point your finger at something, they don't look at what you're pointing at. They look at your finger. You know, the point of the rules isn't to affect change for people. The point of the rules is to have the rules and to say, look, we have all these rules in place.
Therefore, we're compliant.
Right. So it's not whether you are compliant. It's so that they can demonstrate an apparatus of compliance enforcement. That's the point.
Okay. I think you're right. I see that. And I'll give another example. And, it, you know, this was in the news just yesterday that a lot of websites went dark to protest SOPA, which is the Stop Online Piracy Act that the House of Representatives was considering, and its companion legislation in the Senate. That, to me, is an example of making rules just to have the rules, because it's not, you know, ignoring my personal opinions about copyright and intellectual property and all of that. These laws are, first of all, they're flawed because they ignore due process, and they allow the accuser to convict You know, it cuts out the entire legal process in between. If one of the content owners believes that you are guilty, then they can just shut your website down. No questions asked. That's one of the provisions of this law. Now, it doesn't actually solve the problem, because all it really does is, and I don't want to get too technical here for people that don't know how the internet works, but all it really does is take all the addresses for your website out of the DNS database, so that, you know, you wouldn't be able to type, for instance, MidwestPeaceProcess.com. If you type that into your browser, it would go nowhere, because that would no longer exist. But if you knew the IP address for our website, you could still just type that address in and go there and do everything that you had done before. Okay. So it's kind of like if the post office came down your street and removed all the numbers off of all the houses, you would still be able to find your house. You know where you live, but you'd no longer have an address. It's kind of like that. That's what this law is intended to do. So in the same way, I think it's just a rule because it doesn't actually fix the problem it's supposed to be fixing.
As with many laws, I would say.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's like they need this big hammer so that they can use it in situations where, I'd say, maybe most people would agree that it should be used there, but they can't. It seems like the problem is they can't quantify what that situation is, so it's just the sprawling thing. You know, links on the web are bad. You know, it doesn't have the right scope because they don't know how to scope it. Am I being too generous?
No, I know what you're saying, because it doesn't apply just to the person who's infringed on the content owner's copyright. It applies to anybody who links to that content, and anybody who links to the links to that content. You know, it's just it spirals out of control very quickly, and they can basically go after anybody who's in that chain of links.
So if I link to something on my Facebook page, for instance, they're going to take down my Facebook page. So that,
well, potentially.
Yeah, and that's.
But I mean, they wouldn't be able to take down just your page. They would have to take Facebook down. That's the level at which, you know, when all you have is a hammer, then every problem looks like a nail. You know.
Jerry, you're knocking these analogies out of the park tonight, I got to say.
Well, the hammer here represents the government and their use of force, and that's all the government is. So
it's a force for good.
Yeah.
Yeah, and back to your statement about the roadblocks. Yeah, I wouldn't say that they don't have the authority, or at least like a legal authority. You can talk about other things, but I think we could say that they have the authority to do that, but it was a mindless sort of blunt arrogance that it came in, which is what drove you crazy, right?
Which is the whole point of all this. It's
right
there. We can do this, so we will do this.
Right.
And the damage is done.
And then when you challenge them and ask them to explain the reasoning behind it, you know, that's when you get the arrogance of, I don't have to explain this to you. You just have to do what I say.
Yes. And what if? Well, I don't always like what if questions, because then theory is you've concocted this bogus scenario. But if I'd been hit by a car after parking my truck and then walking home, are they then liable?
Right. Well, I guarantee you they would not be liable. But yeah, I understand what you're saying. So Rick Perry announced he's dropping out. I just wanted to mention that because that makes me happy.
I don't know what it makes me. Can't decide if it makes me happy or sad.
I think he and Bachman were both morons. And, you know, God help us if we actually elected them to the office of the president.
But there was a great many people who were so excited about. Remember when he joined the race? This is the guy, true conservative, you know, good mind on that man.
Yeah.
People were pumped up. And then look what happened.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't know what it means. I think this is good for me. I think it's good for me.
What, like, do you think it had? What did him in? Just him being who he is? Or was it the forgetting his 3 points during the debate? Or was it just a combination of everything?
I think that's when the cracks began to show. But they would have showed eventually. There was no stopping that. I mean,
yeah. I think it's warm in my heart for my Republican friends. You know, there are, I still can't believe there's people out there that, you know, think he's the best thing ever and wish he'd stay in because he should be president. You know, I my heart goes out to them too, I guess. but yeah, I it seems like to me he was just pulling the George Bush stick. But you can't really do George Bush like George Bush can do it, you know?
Right.
And so he tried to pull the folksy, I like to hunt and run in my ranch thing because it worked for W. And I think he was surprised. I think he's shocked that it didn't work.
Right.
I think he can't believe it. He's like, must be the liberal media. What happened here? You know, I think he thought he had all the pieces together. You know, he hit that Tea Party drum, you know, hit Obama every chance he could. You know, he did all the things, but it never caught fire. So yeah. Good job, Republican primary voters.
It's, well, there are those who would say voting right now it's the whole political process is a cargo cult, right? That and he's kind of evidence of that he followed all of the rituals, right, that he was supposed to follow, but you know, the plane that magically lands and dispenses all of the treasures never came. Do you guys know what I'm talking about, a cargo cult?
No.
No?
No. Link in the show notes.
Okay.
No,
yeah, I'll put that in the show notes.
Watch cartoons instead of learning.
Well, okay. So to sum this up, during the final years of World War II, the islands in the South Pacific where we had built temporary bases, there were quite a few natives that lived there that were, you know, some of which had never had contact with Western technology before and were, you know, just awestruck by it. They didn't understand what these magical birds were that came out of the sky and, you know, dropped off all these things that they had never seen before. And so years after the war was over and all the bases were torn down and everybody left, I guess some people went back and visited some of these islands and discovered that these tribes had tried to reconstruct the airfields. They had built, you know, they built radio towers and, you know,
thinking the planes would, like, and, if yeah, you build like, it would come.
Exactly. If you built everything just right, the way it was before, then the magical birds would land again and, you know, bring all of the wondrous gifts. And, you know, obviously it never happened, but it didn't stop them from continuing to, you know, refine the process and, you know, continue the rituals.
Oh, wow. So, I never heard that. That's great.
So yeah, they're called cargo cults. But I mean, the whole political process has become this because we, you know, those that participate in it think that, well, if we just campaign really hard and we say all the right things and we get all the right sound bites, then our guy will get elected and, you know, everything will be perfect. And that never happens. And yet people just continue the ritual cycle after cycle. Every 4 years we play this game and, you know, the magical bird never lands and we never get the wondrous gifts, but it doesn't stop people from continuing.
Doesn't it seem like there really is a gift for these politicians that can really connect with people, really, really, you know, start a movement, thinking of current president as an example. As somebody who can really, really rally people, that these guys can't do it. Like, I don't know why. Like, yeah, Perry botches the debate, but this isn't an electorate that really values, you know, debate performances, I wouldn't think. You know, John Huntsman's over there talking Mandarin. That didn't win him a bunch, you know. We don't really
right.
We don't mind that there's gaffes and fumbles, and you know, that just makes you a folksy true American, you know. That's, you can get around all that stuff.
Yeah.
But somehow he got found out as a phony by his own people. It's good.
Yeah. I would agree with that.
But it raises the question. I'm still trying to figure out where the Tea Party stands. Because you had real Tea Party candidates that hit those Tea Party drums, hit those Tea Party notes.
Yeah.
And they no one rose as a single choice, and all the real Tea Party people, your Bachman Canes and your Perrys are all out of it.
Yeah. Well,
that's strange.
To me, that just says that in the end, we're still a two-party system, and you know, third parties are a novelty. They're a sideshow to kind of keep us entertained for a little while. But you know, in the end, we as a country are going to come back to what we know and love.
Right, and the
Ross
example
Perot was the beginning and end of all that. He was the best hope.
Well, and he, you know, he kind of caused some of the problem too with the way he was in and out and, you know, left people hanging, I think. So the ones that were, you know, truly behind him and wanted to be a part of this third party movement that he started, in the end, they were left with a bad taste in their mouth because he didn't follow through.
Yeah.
So, while we're talking about the election, though, I'll jump ahead here to some listener feedback. This is a listener, longtime listener, who has never commented before, but he asks, if the election were held today, if the presidential election were held today, who would you vote for?
I'd think about it a little bit, 5 seconds maybe. I'd go back with the incumbent.
Okay. No big surprise there, I guess.
No big surprise.
Rob, there's something wrong with your microphone. You just said you were going to vote for Obama again.
hold on. Let me fix it.
Yeah. All right.
But I make this claim that if the right Republican ran, that I would really have to think about it. But I'm not thinking about it too hard.
who is the right Republican? I mean, who would make you vote that way?
Ooh.
Has there ever been anybody that came close?
Ooh, you know,
Bill Clinton running as a Republican.
Yeah. Actually, that's exactly what I was going to say. I was going to say Barack, like Republican Obama, would get my vote.
Yeah.
In first of all, I feel like Obama's he's more of a centrist than a radical liberal, but that might be because I'm radical liberal. But but he I think the way I feel like he understands issues, the way he kind of can, that he's not all on one side on a number of issues, and I feel like he's reliable, and I don't know, I feel like he's center left. If somebody came along that was center right, that was just like him, I'd be way tempted.
Yeah. Okay. You know?
Right.
Jeremy, what do you think?
I would have to vote for Ron Paul. And I know I don't agree with everything he says, but he, I think he wants to do some radical thing. Radical is not the right word. I think he wants to do some things that need to happen that nobody else would be willing to do.
Yeah. Yeah. I would agree with that. And you know, I don't vote, but if Ron Paul were to get the Republican nomination this time, I think I would have to violate my no voting principle and actually go out and vote for him to send that message that, you know, he's doing what a lot of people in this country want done.
Do you think we're like put a hypothetical on our hypothetical, who would you vote for? But if he was president, imagine the shining sunlight of a Paul presidency. do you think anything would actually happen? Like, what would actually happen? I mean, presidents promise truth and light, and we all see through such things.
Right.
So, like you really think the Fed would be abolished? What would happen? Say you even give him a Republican Congress. Let's give him 52 in the Senate and a majority in the House of Representatives, because I can't divide that large number by two. Just call it a majority. You know, give him a Republican Congress and a Paul presidency. What happens that first term?
I think, first of all, he brings all of our troops home from everywhere outside our borders. So he shuts down military bases in, you know, virtually every country in the world and brings everybody home.
All right, I'll write these out. I'll let you keep going.
I don't think that would actually happen.
That wouldn't get anywhere close to happening with a Republican.
Guantanamo. I mean,
well, right. And the
Obama promised that. I was going to be shut down immediately. I think they're warming up the plane while they're counting his votes still. But, you know, look, that's still open.
Well,
and that's only, you know, 80 miles away.
I don't think it would actually happen either, but I think that would be his goal. Just like Obama's goal of shutting down Guantanamo.
I agree. Yes, I agree. That would be a goal.
Right. And I could see him making progress. I could see him doing something.
Like, one thing I think that he would be able to accomplish is, a legitimate audit of the Federal Reserve. I think that could happen in a 4-year term. And that would bring to light a lot of things that, you know, most Americans don't spend time thinking about, and would necessitate some further steps.
Yeah, you know, when you say that, you really think, like, you know, people ask, like, so why did you vote Obama, or why that guy, or why would you vote for him again? I think a main reason to try to throw your guy in there is just how much it changes the conversation of the nation and what people are thinking about.
Right.
You know, in the Bush term, we were thinking about Dixie chicks and evangelicals, you know, and with Obama, like, everybody spent one whole year thinking about how the healthcare system worked. That was only because he was the dude in there.
Right.
And what if we had a whole year where everybody thought about the Fed?
Yeah.
You know, would might change things. Not saying he would abolish it, but boy, it would certainly change the tone of the nation.
I don't think he could abolish it in a single term, and I'm not sure he could do it in two terms, but he could get a ball rolling that was big enough that it would happen even after he left, because it's just...
Especially if they were able to expose some major... major, I don't know if corruption is the right way I would say it, but
shenanigans.
Shenanigans. I mean, that's what people latch on to.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of like, who was that congressman that they found the $90,000 in cash in his freezer?
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? Yeah. I mean, that.
Not,
you know,
not Thomas Jefferson.
George Jefferson. that was enough to, you know, to basically, that was his downfall. And I think something like that would be found, some skeleton would be found in the Fed's closet that would be their undoing. Now, it would take a long time because, you know, we've got a lot of things in place in our economy that rely very heavily on that system. And, you know, next year is the 100th anniversary of us establishing the Federal Reserve.
Yeah.
So we've been doing it for a long time. It would take a long time to undo it. But I think if more people were educated on the detrimental effects that the Fed has, it would facilitate that a lot faster.
When I started thinking about the Fed, getting rid of the Fed and what that would mean, I still think it could happen. If you look at Europe, a whole continent transferred to a different currency, why couldn't we?
Yeah. Well, and it's not even that we need to transition to a different currency. We just need to go back to the gold standard. And
I don't know if I'm a gold bug, as the term goes.
Yeah, well, I don't want to go down that rabbit hole now, because that's actually one of my issues that we'll talk about in a future episode. But, okay, well, I'm gonna call time on this discussion and say we need to take a little break right here. When we come back, we will jump into our listener feedback, which I'm itching to do. Some of the feedback we received from last week's episode about public school, and I think there's enough material here. We'll probably end up doing another episode about our education system in the future, but for right now, we're going to address the comments that have been made by some of our listeners. And speaking of comments, we live on your feedback, so we would love to hear from all of you. And I challenged our listeners last week to send us email at our address, feedback@midwestpeaceprocess.com. Sadly, I did not receive any emails at that address.
Step it up, listeners.
So let's
apparently our listeners are as lazy as we are.
Yeah, apparently. So please send us a note or leave us a comment on our website, midwestpeaceprocess.com. Or you can also comment on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/Midwest Peace. Our listener Nathan wants us to say more about the socialization aspect of homeschooling. He says, not just what's bad about the government youth propaganda camps socialization, but what you are doing and what other options are available. I hate to say it, but the socialization thing is something that seems to be persistent even with those that aren't familiar with homeschooling. With homeschoolers, most kids don't have the artificially created age barriers of socialization. That is, most homeschool kids are able to carry on a conversation with an adult and look them in the eye. I think this occurs earlier in life for homeschooled kids than, say, the government youth propagandized variety. Speaking as a homeschooler, I would tend to agree with that. My experience has been that homeschooled kids, at least the ones that are homeschooled throughout their schooling age career, if you will, those are definitely more polite, more socially engaging at very young ages than I have seen with kids who are part of, you know, public school, private school, what have you. It's striking. It really is. So I would pull out one of the things that Nathan said here about the artificially created age barriers, and that I think is probably the biggest disservice that the public school system and private school system, for that matter, that they do to our kids, because they artificially create these grades where, you know, the kids are definitely getting socialized, but they're only interacting with other kids the same age as them, which is not natural. I mean, that's not life. That's not how, you know, we as adults experience the world. So it doesn't, you know, it doesn't seem right to me, and it certainly doesn't seem beneficial to me to do that with kids.
I agree with that. And two examples. One, you look back to the old schoolhouse in the frontier days. They had all the kids in one room.
Yeah, that's how my dad went to school.
Yeah, and I think there's some evidence that was a pretty good way of doing things, maybe.
Yeah.
The other one, I'll go back to the marching band. You have all four grades. Yeah, you got, I'm the space band,
space geek,
conspiracy geek over here. The trifecta of geekdom. But you had all four grades all in together. And then in middle school or junior high, some people call it, if you were in jazz band, it was all grades combined. And it definitely influenced, I would say in a positive way, how my high school experience. Because you end up having upperclassmen as friends, and you're not, you maybe shed some of that, oh, look at that dork freshman stigma when you're a freshman or an underclassman.
Right. And I, you know, I made a comment in last episode about the socialization of in the public schools kind of is an indictment of itself. And I'm referring to, you know, the clickiness of high school, for instance, or the problems with bullying. I mean, that problem alone does not exist in a homeschool community. Even when the homeschool kids get together for social events, there are no bullies. None.
Really?
And all of the kids are, you know, they interact well with one another because that's all they've ever known. And they, you know, if what's interesting is when you have a social event where you've got all these homeschool kids together, and there's one kid who maybe went to public school for a few years and then his parents pulled him out for whatever reason, and now they're trying to homeschool him. You'll see that behavior in that individual, and he kind of like infects everybody else. And you know, then it's obvious to you where that kind of behavior comes from. And, you know, school is the source. It's not the kids themselves. It's the situation that we're putting them in. So
that's interesting.
I totally get what you're saying. I just for fun, I'll mention that in one part of what you were saying there is you mentioned about the school environment not being like the world that we live in, where we interact with people of all different ages and different experiences, not all the same age.
Right.
But then we certainly interact with bullies every day and goofy people that were educated in the public school, you know. That's like dealing with all people who aren't bullies in a adult environment is also not realistic.
Well, okay, point taken. But you know, do the thought experiment with me where we go forward in time 40 or 50 years after all public schools have been eliminated and everybody is either homeschooled or goes to some private school, and you know, the bully problem doesn't exist anymore in school. Okay.
Right.
So those bullies don't grow up to become adult bullies, and we manage to eliminate them from the population. Right?
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying that's absolutely what would happen, but I mean, it's just something interesting to think about, that if the system we've crafted is what is actually creating bullies, you know,
right,
and we dismantle that system, then, you know, some point in the future, the last bully on earth dies, and
right, Yeah, I would say it's probably not the system that's making the bullies. I would say that the system is welcoming in the kids whose parents have made that kid a bully.
That could be too. You're right. And the problem then is that the system has no way of dealing with that kid.
Sure. That's for sure.
Can't kick him out. Can't make him go home. Got to deal with him somehow.
Right. Right. So you throw him in with everybody else and hope for the best. Right.
So that, you know, that's problem number one with public schools is that they're compulsory and all the kids have to be there.
Right.
You can't choose not to be there.
Have you guys followed the Dutch teenager who's sailing around the world? I forget her name. I think she's 14. When you said it's compulsory, this reminded me of this. So, but she reported, she's almost finished with the journey. She reported back that she had encountered some storms, and because of all the stormy weather, she was having trouble keeping up with her studies. Well, that report got to the school officials, and they issued her father a truancy violation.
Nice.
And apparently he had to go through a lot of legal hoops to even get them to allow her to be on this voyage, and you know, because she was going to be missing school. And my impression was that she's getting a much better education on her own sailing around the world than
no
she
doubt.
Would sitting in a classroom.
Right. Well, there's certainly things she's learning that she could never learn in that classroom. You're right. Yeah, that's kind of crazy.
What a shame. No bullies. No more. The sales of pickup trucks with lift kits and mud tires would go into the toilet.
That's right.
The Calvin and Hobbes stickers wouldn't sell anymore.
Think the companies that sell truck nuts would go out of business. Okay, listener Eric, he's at it again. He starts with sending us a link, which I'll provide in the show notes, to an article in The Atlantic called The Failure of American Schools. It's a very interesting article. It's a long article, I warn people, but it's worth reading. It's written by a guy named Joel Klein, who served as the chancellor of the New York City Public Schools for 8 years. So I would say that he's, you know, fairly well-versed in all of the problems that a large public school system has. And so Eric provides this link, and he said, here's the best article about education I've read recently. But by the way, just a statement, I didn't go to public school and neither do my kids, so I can't comment on a lot of the problems you guys talked about. Well, if he read the article, I don't understand how he could come away from that thinking anything other than the public school system is completely broken. I mean, it's just, you know, the article goes into detail about so many of the problems with, you know, teachers that can't be fired and the tenure system and you know, the pay structure, the fact that, you know, the New York City schools are going to, they're rapidly reaching the point where they're just going to have to shut down because all the income is going to have to go to pay retired teachers' pensions, you know, because they've just reached these gargantuan proportions that, you know, their budget can't support them anymore. So, I mean, it's just a litany of problems that he documents in there. And that's just New York City. But if it's that bad there, you have to believe that, you know, those same problems exist in virtually every large city and probably the small town schools as well. But so I'm a little puzzled why, given Eric's next few statements here, I'm puzzled why he led off with that link. But anyway, he says, big statement from me right off the bat. It seems like you guys are predicating your arguments on the assumption that schools provide all of the education of your kids. I consider school to provide a basis for my children's education, but I try to take an active role too. Nothing says I can't supplement my children's education on my own where I feel the school is lacking.
they have the vast majority of the time, though. So, yeah, they're not providing all of the education, but it's a majority.
Well, yeah, it's a good point.
I think he's just saying that we may have overstated the case in the last episode that you're the I think we were doing it. We're had a little bit too black and white of this idea of whether a homeschooling parent would educate their kids and kind of fill them with knowledge, or the school would, when that's not really how it works. I mean, you got your school day for your school stuff, but that doesn't mean that you're also not educating your child. You know, that a public school parent is also doing a lot of homeschooling themselves in a way. But you're right as far as the time, but I think he's just pointing out the fact that it's not quite so black and white.
Probably, and maybe it's just an interpretation issue, because I don't know that that's what we meant. But part of that also goes that not only would a public school parent have to supplement the education, they would also have to spend time deprogramming their child from the public education.
Well, I did start off my comments last time by saying that education and schooling are not the same thing.
Yes.
And I would expand on that now by saying that, you know, education is a lifelong journey that may or may not ever have anything to do with an institution that we call school. I mean, your example earlier of the girl sailing around the world, that's a great example. That's part of her education, but it's got nothing to do with school. I also want to be very clear that there's a world of difference between the intent of a private school and a government-run public school. So, you know, the former being to make money, and the latter being indoctrination. And I don't know how to state it any clearer than that. Neither of those are necessarily helpful to a parent, you know, who's trying to educate their child. But the former, you know, the private school model is at least, you know, there's going to be some incentive there for them to listen to the parents' desires as a customer, as a quote customer, you know. So reform is much more likely to happen under that model than it is the public school model.
Go ahead, Jeremy.
I kind of drifted off because I this
sorry
the reason I did it, it brought up I started remembering my high school physics teacher, Miss Teague, and she was talking about
were you hot for teacher, Jeremy?
No. Very nice lady, not date material. she was very much a student advocate, I would say.
Okay.
Most of the teachers I've experienced, she was probably top two or three student advocate type teachers. And we were talking about why seniors no longer got out early, you know, like a 2 weeks early or whatever it used to be that some of my older siblings experienced. And she talked to the principal about it, and his response was, "We need that time to fully inculcate," was the word he used. And she pointed out to us that word was important, to fully inculcate these children with our curriculum. And if I didn't look it up before I told this story, but I think at the time she was saying that word is almost like it means to apply by force.
Oh, yeah.
And it just goes back to what you're saying about
maybe the principal
being an indoctrination. Well, that's possible, but
yes,
my stories aren't going anywhere tonight.
I think that's a good illustration, actually, because, you know, it dovetails with what I was saying about indoctrination.
That's why it made me think of it.
Yeah. I just looked up definition here, Webster's, inculcate, to teach and impress by frequent repetitions or admonitions. And the example sentence is, the teacher inculcated in her students the importance of good study habits.
It didn't notice. It didn't say the homeschool teacher.
That's right.
That's right.
So Eric goes on to say, "People have a natural curiosity." He's quoting me now, and he says, "Some people do. Many people don't." Now, I think that's nonsense. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I kind of think it is nonsense because you didn't qualify your curiosity to mean curiosity about important things.
Well,
and that's what he's saying.
That's not how I read it. I read it as there are just some people who are not curious about things. And
yes.
Well,
that's what I'm saying. And
if that's true, I think, first of all, I believe curiosity is a natural human trait. I think anybody who has kids knows this because kids are naturally inquisitive about the world around them. And I think, some kids are more curious than others. But I think if you encounter an adult who is not curious about the world, then you've encountered an adult that, had that natural curiosity trained out of them in a school, and most likely a public school. Because they do not favor individuals asking questions that are outside the approved curriculum. Curiosity is not rewarded in school.
Well, even parents beat that out of the kids to some extent. You're walking around, you pick something up in the store, they say, "Put that down and keep your hands off that."
Yeah, well, that's true.
Well, it's just curious.
I'm getting it beat out of me at work.
that's certainly true, but I mean, I would not make the statement that some people are curious and some aren't. I think
it's whether it's about important things.
That's
like
that's
I know a lot of kids who comments. Are not right. They're not going to get curious about how counting works or how subtraction works. I wonder if I could devise a system of subtraction.
Curious as hell what Snooki wore to the MTV Music Awards.
Yes, yes. Or what the new app is on their little mobile device. We're sort of curmudgeonly.
We're old.
With Snooki and their iPods.
And, of course, Eric had to get one more dig in on and said, "I still think we're more literate now than 150 years ago."
That's like a blast from the past.
Dude. Yeah, so we're back to that again. I would just say, hey, I invite you to cite a reference to back up that claim because, I don't believe it.
That'll be next show's topic.
So, when I made my claim, he made me back it up. Now I'm going to make him do the same. He says, "So I heard a lot of talking, but what's the possible solutions? I know Jerry's homeschool, but what about everyone else? What is your ideal situation for educating your kids? What does your perfect school look like?"
Yeah, for me, I would say it would be a public school with a bunch of kids from parents that are just like me.
Ooh, man.
Okay.
Or not? Yeah, just like me. Not just like me. It depends on what sort of attributes. We call it just like me. Like they all don't have to be 5'11", but parents that all are raising their children somewhat similarly as the way I'm raising my child, all thrown together in a big public blob would be about ideal.
So what, similar values, you mean?
Right.
Okay. So much for diversity.
Not diversity of, well, not of, yeah, yeah. So much for diversity if you're talking about values. I don't want a whole diverse bunch of values.
Okay.
That's another hot button of mine, Jerry. We bring up diversity. I don't subscribe to the diversity for the sake of diversity, and that's around work a lot. But
they're meaning
a different way, but
yeah,
right. This is a whole, maybe this is a whole topic too, but yeah, to me, I think diversity is crucial but it's not the diversity that it's become, or what that term is, has become,
yes,
has come to mean in the in our modern society.
Well, okay, so if you had, let's say I open a school and I survey, you know, a bunch of people and find out that they all have similar values when it comes to, you know, what they want their kids to learn and whatever, you know, I through some algorithm I determine that you're all well matched, and you know, I invite you to bring your kids to my school and I'll teach them. Okay, it's not a public school, because public schools don't do that. It's a private school. Would you be okay with that?
Sure.
Okay. Well, and I mean, I think that's the business that private schools are in, is catering to, you know, the parents' desires. So, I mean, maybe I want to open a liberal, you know, politically liberal private school. And,
right.
And only invite people of like political mind to bring their kids there.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you got me thinking here. Yeah, because I don't. One thing that I think is key with a public school, Jeremy can refute or confirm this, is it has to do with the diversity of kids that are there. Like I say, like values, and I say like parents, but I don't want all the kids to be just like my kid, you know. I want kids that are really good at sports and ones that are terrible at it, and I want the AV club and we need Jeremy's kid, the band dork, in there.
Hey, it's band geek, all right.
Don't worry. They're playing with my kid. You know, I want that mix. And to me, that's something that would be important, more than like a homeschooling thing. And I think what turns me off about the private school thing for me is that one thing I can't get past is it seems like private school, at least around here, is almost a status symbol or of some sort that I can't really quite grasp.
Yeah.
You know, it's not right. That especially when it gets to high school, that it's not really about that school. It's about the cachet you're trying to earn within the region.
Yeah.
About that school, and sometimes it's not about the kids. It's that now you are a parent who can send their kid to that school,
right?
And that's freaky.
Yeah, I agree with that assessment.
But that might be uniquely here.
Well, it's the St. Louis question,
right?
Where'd you go to high school?
Yeah.
Right. But if that's the St. Louis question, the reason why is because we don't really have neighborhoods that have any meaning. And it also gives you it allows people to put a finger on some sort of class.
Yes, I would agree with that. That's the origin of the question.
Right.
Yes.
It's not like, oh, did you know Ricky? He went to Chaminade. That's not the point.
Right. It's, no. Oh, I know where you grew up, so I kind of know a little bit about who you are and what you're like. And
Right.
I don't know if we're finished with that topic, but I was just going to say that I don't think
what's your perfect school look like.
I don't think it differs too much from Rob's. I know that when I was in school, I could not stand the kids who didn't want to pay attention, who were talking. It would make me. I mean, I'd start shifting around in my seat because I just wanted them to shut up and pay attention.
Right.
And if I could be in a school where the kids wanted to learn and wanted to experience things, then that would be closer to my ideal.
Yeah, what a novel idea.
Yeah.
A room full of kids who actually want to be there and let everybody else leave.
I feel like this is a trap.
It's a trap!
Why do you say that, Rob?
Come on, Jerry, spring it on us.
No, I was just, I mean, I was going to say what my perfect school looked like. And I haven't spent that much time thinking about it. I mean, I think the homeschool model is not, it's certainly not perfect. But I think a perfect school is one that asks the child what they want to learn about, what their interests are, and, you know, allows them to direct their own learning to, you know, the greatest extent possible. And, you know, the public schools cannot accommodate that in any way, shape, or form. You basically need a one-to-one student-teacher ratio in order to do that, or something close to it. And so, you know, there are Montessori schools around, and that is the Montessori method, is allowing the kids to direct their own education. And they are extremely expensive, and that's why, because they need a lot of teachers, they need a lot of resources, because, you know, the kids could say absolutely anything. Well, I want to learn about nuclear physics today. Well, okay, we're going to take a little field trip to a nuclear power plant, or, you know, that's how those schools work, though. And you get what you pay for, I guess. So, but, you know, contrast that then with the person who says that my perfect school is free, you know. That's right. The only criteria. I just need a place to dump my kids during the day so I don't have to pay for daycare. That's their perfect school.
Do you know much about Waldorf schools?
Yeah, a little bit. I've read a little bit about them. Is that the one where they, the kids vote on which teachers they like the best and can actually fire their teachers if they don't like them?
Something like that, yeah. Mm. Thank goodness Wiki's back. Says, yeah, learning is interdisciplinary, integrating practical, artistic, and conceptual elements, emphasizes the role of imagination in learning, developing thinking that includes a creative as well as analytic component. So, yeah, not a fan of the Waldorf school.
Why? What about that sounds bad to you?
Well, of course, it sounds nice and on Wikipedia. I think there's a danger. I guess the danger is in all these school systems, but I think there's a danger in like this particular one where kids can settle into a real mediocrity, I'll go ahead and say. You know, like, say you want to be artistic. Well, Jimmy's not really good at circles, you know, so he's going to build the sets for the Waldorf play. And you might have kids in the Waldorf school who are doing the acting and writing the play and writing the music and really Waldorfing it up. But but if you got little Jimmy over there that needs more direct instruction for whatever his issues are, you know, they're just going to if he says, "Oh, I want to paint the set." And he's just the paint the set guy, and everybody agrees that's a good thing for Jimmy to do, and Jimmy's happy. Well, no one's really challenged Jimmy to do better there, you know, because there's no structure for improvement. Now, I think you can levy that same complaint at public school or private school or anything else. I mean, I can't hold up public schools as the paragon of achievement for kids, but it's almost like a system like this almost. Allows for it or almost encourages it in some cases.
I see what you're saying, but yeah, you kind of made the point for me that applies to virtually any school.
Right.
But I don't know. Challenging the kids is probably a beneficial thing in most circumstances. And I don't see that wouldn't happen in a Waldorf school. The teachers there are, you know, trained probably the same way any teacher is. So that's kind of something they're expected to do, isn't it?
Waldorf curriculum has from its inception originally incorporated multiple intelligences. I'm reading from Wiki here. There are a few subjects largely unique. Foremost is eurythmy, a movement art usually accompanying spoken text or music, which includes elements of role play and dance and is designed to provide individuals and classes with a sense of integration and harmony. Man, talk about your indoctrination. I don't know.
It does sound awfully granola to me.
It is.
Just related to Burning Man or anything like that.
I don't know how we got on this, but it's a more loosey-goosey children-directed thing that I think has its drawbacks. Like for example, and what if you think education is preparation for adulthood life, I think a big factor that plays in is how you foster that creative energy in a kid, because one thing that seems to be crucial in adulthood is to be able to have some creative energy otherwise you just get crazy, just the endless work, and it's a huge part of enjoyment. But another thing is just this idea of there's this stuff to do and you have to do it, and you can't, like, I can't foster my imagination when I'm a productive employee. You know, I can't just think, what would it be like to go do this? Because I got a job to do. That's what the job is.
Right.
You know, and so there's a mix there. Like not everything in life is self-directed.
Maybe it should be.
Ooh. That would be nice. I wonder what I would do. I wonder if I'd be, like, super productive or just sit around eating Cheetos.
Well, money's on Cheetos.
Yeah, sometimes I think...
Who's buying you the Cheetos? That would be my question.
I'll have a stockpile from after my working career. Yeah, I mean, I have ideas that sometimes I think, like, man, if I had a bunch of time, I would do all this stuff. But maybe if I didn't have the structure, because I've been indoctrinated with structure, I would just sit around and watch Jerry Springer.
I don't think that would happen. I think you would still be productive. Here's why I say that. To some extent, we're probably similar, Rob.
Nay.
Maybe.
Sure.
When we're on vacation between Christmas and New Year's, I do a fair amount of lounging on the couch. But then I always start getting really productive by the end of it. I start a project on my house, whether it's painting something or something with drywall. And I don't know if that's because I see the end approaching, or if finally I've done all the lounging I can, and now I need something to do.
Right.
Yeah. Well, that motivation to do something is probably different for every individual, but I would tend to agree that we all have it. You know, just sitting around doing nothing gets boring if you do it long enough.
Yeah, that's kind of why we're doing this here, right? It's it's
that's right. Keeps it's Rob boring. Off the couch.
That's right.
Keeps his fingers from turning orange. another part.
Ick. All right, one final listener comment, and then we're going to have to wrap things up here. Eric responded, this is, actually, I don't even remember what I said now about, he says, Jerry, the jury trial rights issue was in response to the idea that rights exist on their own out there and are not a human construction. I don't see how you can say that there exists a fundamental set of rights outside of human construction. My only question would be, so you disagree with the unanimous declaration that those truths are not self-evident. So I'll let him respond to that. Because I do believe those truths are self-evident. What do you guys
think? I'm not sure I do. I think, because if back in the caveman days, it was just, you were another animal to eat or be eaten. And as,
okay.
Maybe that's going a little too far back, but.
No, I don't think so, because I think that's the point at which we as a species began to evolve the notion of natural rights. We knew, if I took something from you, you know, that belonged to you, you had the sense that you had been wronged, you know, that I had done something wrong to you.
Yep.
And the other members of our tribe, if that's what they were, could look at that and also make that determination that, hey, I got to stay away from that Jerry guy because he takes things. He's not a good guy.
True.
Now,
unless you're the bigger guy and you just take it right back.
Well, that may be, but that doesn't change the mental process that goes on there. That the witnesses who see that make a judgment about me, you know, and my actions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is the bedrock of the natural rights that I'm talking about.
That's a good point. I didn't take my caveman thinking far enough when I dreamed up that scenario.
And the same would be true of other crimes. You know, if I killed you, then, you know, obviously you're dead. You don't have an opinion about that. But the other people who witnessed it have an opinion about me and my actions. And, you know, it became an evolutionary advantage for people to be able to make those moral judgments about one another. And I think that is where this notion of rights sprung from originally.
And this, or maybe this is going in a weird direction, but this assumes that there's some kind of group dynamic going on. So animals that are more exist on their own, this kind of wouldn't apply.
You mean like the lone wolf kind of thing?
Yeah.
I mean, you have the concept of the stranger in our midst, right? Like some new guy walks into town that nobody else has seen before. Everybody's ears perk up and, you know.
You're still... I see what you're going after there, but you're still then talking about a group, like how a group responds to a person.
So you're just saying if we all lived individually, that we weren't social creatures.
Yes.
Then would we individually come up with this notion of rights on our own?
Yeah.
Yeah, I probably not. I mean, what rights of our own could we violate?
Yeah. I still think you would, you encountered another animal and it took something from you, you'd be not too pleased by that. But I don't know. Maybe that is the very fundamental right there.
Yeah. Well, and I wouldn't, I mean, depending on my level of intelligence, I wouldn't assume that animal was violating my rights because it wasn't smart enough to, you know, recognize them in the first place. This is obviously very philosophical and I mean, I find it interesting to talk about, but it can get tedious. So
yeah.
Rob, you got anything else?
Nope.
Okay. I think that we have reached the end of yet another episode. Thank you to all of our listeners. And once again, leave us some feedback. We'd love to hear from you. Send us some topic suggestions that you want to hear us talk about or debate. And you can look forward to our series here of the top issues facing America. I guess that's what we're calling it. So we'll have another one for you next time. And thanks again for checking us out. We'll see you next time. I was waiting for you guys to say bye.
Jeremy always goes first.
Bye.